From Uniontown to York, Hazleton to Grantham, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, a Pennsylvania icon may soon be owned by Japan-based Nippon Steel. Our Capital Watch crew is here to talk about the pending sale of U.S. Steel. David Taylor is joined by Rebecca Euler and Stephen Bloom. And as we celebrate the joys of the Christmas season, I'll have our traditional Lincoln Radio Journal reading of the biblical account of the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania Democrats met this past week and endorsed candidates in two of the statewide constitutional or row offices, which will be on the ballot in 2024. State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta from Philadelphia was endorsed for Auditor General, while State Representative Ryan Bizarro of Erie was endorsed for State Treasurer. Should they prevail in the primary, they will take on incumbent Republican Auditor General Tim DeFore and State Treasurer Stacey Garrity. State Democrats failed to endorse for Attorney General, as no one in the multi-candidate field received enough votes to secure the endorsement. Pennsylvania Republicans are set to hold an endorsement vote for Attorney General in early February. That seat is open, as incumbent Michelle Henry is serving by appointment in the final years of Josh Shapiro's term following his resignation to become governor. Once again, adding to uncertainty over the state's voter registration and election process, the Shapiro administration has canceled a $10.7 million contract for planned upgrades to the voter roll management system. That leaves the state stuck for the presidential election cycle with a system that officials say is outdated and inefficient. The statewide Uniform Registry of Electors, known as SURE, is now two decades old and has been plagued by problems in the past year. The planned upgrade was canceled after state election officials determined it was not meeting required timelines and performance standards. Erie County will be included in a short list, seven to be exact, of bellwether counties to be utilized by NBC News as so-called decider counties in its analysis and projections of the upcoming presidential election. Erie County has been a so-called swing county for several decades as it fluctuates back and forth between the parties. Barack Obama carried Erie County by 16 points in 2012. Donald Trump won the county by 2 points in 2016, while Joe Biden eked out a 1-point win in 2020. All three carried Pennsylvania en route to winning the White House. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. A venerable Pennsylvania institution has been purchased by a Japanese company, and Pennsylvania students seeking educational choice opportunities will find additional cash in their stockings. Our Capital Watch crew is here to talk about this and to offer a few gift suggestions for Pennsylvania politicos. Here is your Capital Watch host, David Taylor.
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to see you.
Great to see you, David. As always, delighted to be here.
Well, and we've also got Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, thanks for being with us.
So happy to be here again. Thanks, David.
Well, we're winding it down. We're here for the last Capital Watch of 2023. And so as we, reach this milestone, we wish everybody, a very happy Christmas celebration this weekend and a joyous new year the week after. So let's just go around the horn. Steve, what's on your mind?
Well, at the end of the year here, after one of the most tumultuous and really dysfunctional years I've ever seen in the Pennsylvania legislature, in the Pennsylvania Capitol, something really good did happen. So there was actually kind of a Christmas miracle in that the really important educational improvement tax credit program and opportunity scholarship tax credit programs, both of which provide for kids in areas especially where the public schools are failing, and give them enough resources that they can get to a private school or parochial school or some other alternative, These programs, which are sold out, maxed out, kids are on waiting lists, tens of thousands of kids, actually got expanded. The House, the Senate, and the governor got together and by $150 million expanded the EITC, OSTC programs. And that is, again, kind of a Christmas miracle when we've seen so much dysfunction all year long. The most inept effort at a state budget that I've seen since I've been observing this for the last 15 or 20 years. And good news, finally, for Pennsylvania students who are trapped in schools where a little bit of help from a scholarship can get them into a school where they can actually learn. Big deal for Christmas.
Yeah, and this is also important for the businesses that that apply for those tax credits to use for that.
Funded through donations from companies and individuals around the state.
Yes,
so it's a win-win. It allows for our companies to be more competitive by having these utilizing these tax credits, and it helps these kids straight away.
And it also helps a lot of our cultural and scientific institutions that provide programming, educational programming for kids in all kinds of different educational contexts. So that's a bit
of a December miracle there.
Well, that's outstanding. Good news will be received. It doesn't come around quite as often as we'd like. Rebecca, what's on your mind?
Well, I have something good to report, too. It was a difficult year for the trucking industry. Costs were at an all-time high this year, as they are in many sectors of the economy. But we did have some good news to report just last week. The State Transportation Commission approved of a study that was done over the course of this year on truck parking, which is one of the biggest issues that we have in the industry right now. You drive along the interstates and you see trucks pulled up alongside the roads off the on and off ramps, and that's not allowed, and it's unsafe. So we really need to build more truck parking into our infrastructure and surrounding communities. So the State Transportation Commission approved a study last week that did four things, which I'm really proud of. And luckily enough, we were the ones who suggested the study, and I was the chair of the committee. So I'm really
happy. That's tremendous,
happy.
Rebecca. Thank you for your leadership. Oh,
thanks.
Rattle them off.
Excited about
it. What are the four things?
Well, it actually sets up a framework to actually analyze where the areas are in most need of truck parking. So it applies that framework to the highways across the Commonwealth and tells us where we should focus our efforts. It allows that framework to be applied going forward. So if we're trying to prioritize projects in the future, that's great too. But it sets up actually, this is where it takes it a step farther because we've done truck parking studies before, 19 specific action items for solving the problem, which is amazing. So happy about that. But two other important things that I think it did is it outlined why the issue is so important and why we need so many partners in solving the issue, including local governments, regional planning authorities, shippers and receivers, and all of those things. So I'm excited about that. But probably the most important thing that it does is it actually establishes PennDOT as an executive sponsor for moving forward with these steps. Because as you know, things don't really happen very easily in government if you don't have someone committed to seeing the project through. So that's an important step too. So
PennDOT, which, that makes sense, our transportation department, that they will be the lead agency to make sure that these things actually happen.
Yes. So I'm excited about that, and we're looking forward to working forward on addressing those truck parking challenges next year.
Well, and again, just to go back to first principles, and we've discussed the program before, but just for the listeners right now, why do we need these parking spots?
Well, truckers have very specific hours of service regulations that they have to follow. So when they have to take a break, they're required by law to take a break. So if they're, dropping off their load or picking up a load in a nearby community, but they hit their hours of service limitation before they get there, they have to find a place to stop, somewhere along their route in order to take that required break. And there are just simply not enough parking spaces available for them to take those breaks. In fact, there's only one parking space for every 11 truck drivers in the United States.
Oh.
And actually, one of the study found that Pennsylvania highways during peak periods, which is overnight, obviously, our truck parking is occupied at 103%. Mm. So there just are not enough parking spaces. And our economy, as everyone I think knows, depends on trucking, depends on the movement of raw materials and finished products and retail goods. Everyone depends on trucks.
In the manufacturing world, obviously, we were all hit with the big news that U.S. Steel, after 122 years, will no longer be a sovereign American company, that they are going to be purchased by Nippon Steel of Japan, and that the combined company of Nippon and U.S. Steel will be the second largest steelmaker in the world. So obviously there's an awful lot of, state and federal clearing that will have to take place before that transaction can be consummated. But if this is being done for business reasons and it's necessary for the health of both companies, then so be it. But, I can't help feeling that the world did not have to be this way, that there are an awful lot of things that Pennsylvania has done, state and local, to make it more difficult for a steelmaker like U.S. Steel to be profitable. And, just to touch on a couple of those things, that sometimes the listeners on this show have heard us talk about the carry forward of net operating losses. And I know that sounds complex, but it really is pretty straightforward, which is that for those companies that don't earn a profit in nice, tidy 12-month chunks, that this is a policy whereby you can smooth out the tax bite so that there isn't an undue penalty when a company that has suffered losses becomes profitable again. And so this is very important for cyclical companies, and that our industrial metals manufacturers are very much in that mode, that's very cyclical. There are big swings, big losses that then, hopefully in subsequent years are offset by big gains. But, because Pennsylvania is one of the only places in America where you can't apply the fullness of your recent losses to your current and near future tax liability, it just makes it that much harder, and it puts our guys at a disadvantage. And again, it's the who's to say which is the straw that breaks the camel's back.
But you look at a state like Pennsylvania that has chosen intentionally to pursue policies that become a burden or obstacle to businesses growing and thriving here, and instead actually becomes an impediment to them. You see the consequences. You can't avoid it. You can pretend sometimes for 10 years or 15 years or even 40 years, but eventually it catches up, and the world is still out there trying to outcompete us. And now we see that the Japanese have done so. They've got the wherewithal to come in here and make an offer to purchase this American icon, U.S. Steel. Think about the world in the 1940s when U.S. Steel led in really empowering the United States of America to win the day in World War II.
And to defeat Imperial Japan and the Tojo.
And now, if you would have told those GIs that were involved in that conflict that Nippon Steel would be buying U.S. Steel based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, no one would have believed it.
It's
tragic in many ways, but it's most tragic because of, the well-known consequences of anti-business policies. We all know that this is not good for American business and not good for American strength and prosperity. But yet, year after year after year, our government here at the state level, and we see it nationally too, pursues policies that unfairly penalize our industrial base.
And the one of the things that really breaks my heart is that U.S. Steel had been poised to undergo a modernization of the Edgar Thomson plant in Braddock and the Clairton Coke Works, and that U.S. Steel was prepared to spend, I think it was over $1 billion. I think it was $1.5 billion to upgrade and modernize those facilities, and that as a result that they would be not only more efficient and more profitable, but also that it would greatly reduce their emissions and would make them more defensible to the regulators, which is, of course, extremely important, and that – but U.S. Steel needed a permit for a natural gas pipeline to take locally harvested natural gas to pipe it to those facilities to swap out coal-fired cogen with natural gas, and that the Allegheny County Health Department, which is like a mini DEP, but because it predates DEP, that it was grandfathered. So you have this county agency sat on the permit for 2 years. And then after they came back out of COVID lockdown, they disallowed it. So they knocked out this key piece of the modernization plan, and that, you know, U.S. Steel having to move at the speed of business, that they, you know, that was when they purchased the electric arc steel recycling facility in Arkansas. And again, Steve, it's just as you say, that these, you know, the policy has consequences. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association.
Why is it our policymakers are not connecting the dots between the policies that they espouse and the results of those policies? It's definitely obvious to me that that these policies are resulting in the decline of business here in the United States and in Pennsylvania too, in particular. But it's just not getting through to the policymakers.
Well, and I think there's a lot that's going on. I think also that there's a lot of psychological warfare that's going on. I think that you have that there are hostile foreign powers that are using their influence to fund foundations that then fund other funders that then fund these anti-industry groups here in the U.S. and that that people's minds have been poisoned, and so insofar as people want these impossible things that are being promised by the radical greens, and that's what people think they want, and that the politicians are responding to the public will. I mean, you look at the race that was just held for Allegheny County Executive, and you had Joe Rocky, the businessman, working with the hard hat unions, saying that he wanted a pro production, pro jobs agenda for Allegheny County, and that the victor, former state representative Sarah Inamorato, that she explicitly campaigned on banning fracking, and that she was going to use the Allegheny County Health Department to crack down further on industry in the county. So it's a tragedy, but this is what people voted for. And so that H.L. Mencken said that democracy was the idea that the people should get what they want, and that they should get it good and hard. So I guess that's what's going to happen out there in Allegheny County.
Well, I'm just thinking about, I mean, there are prominent Democrat policymakers right now who are criticizing the deal, the NIPON deal, and saying, we want to keep jobs here in Pennsylvania. But those are the same policymakers that espouse the policies that we've been talking about.
Yep.
So I just, for the life of me, I mean, I understand what you're saying, psychological warfare, and these are the folks who are elected. But at a certain point, how do they take responsibility for that?
Yeah, I don't know. And I got to tell you, I was in front of the House Environmental Resources and Energy Committee not long ago, and that I was the only testifier who was there against the proposal, which is a mandate that 30% of all Pennsylvania electricity be generated by Tier 1 renewables. Well, one of the Tier 1s that is even remotely, functional is solar power. And that essentially to generate 30% of Pennsylvania's electricity from solar power, that it would be necessary to pave an area the size of Chester, Delaware, and Philadelphia counties every square inch with solar panels. And that's only, and that's none of that is transmission lines or battery backup or any of the other stuff that would be necessary. Like it's an area of acreage. It's actually like a third of all of Pennsylvania state forests.
And we talk about wanting to preserve wetlands and valuable natural resources and
open space,
recreational space, all those things that people profess to love, a clean and pure environment. And then they want to wreck it with ridiculously inefficient mandates on energy production through destructive means.
Correct. And that for and to require to mandate tier one renewables for 30% of our electricity, it would have to be solar because the other ones like wind would require even more land, but that the supply chains for these technologies are dominated by the dictatorship in Beijing. So we would be making ourselves dependent on a hostile foreign power, that the supply chains for all of those things are contaminated with slave labor and horrible human rights abuses by Beijing, and that even more – that the useful life of these solar panels is about 25 years, after which they become toxic garbage. So the volume of panels that we would be importing and installing with no plan for disposal after they stop working, I mean, it really is just – it's just insane. And I was the only person who was there trying to explain – why these are bad ideas. Oh, and by the way, also it would be murder on the ratepayers because the just the compliance charges that the utilities have to pay to set up and operate these things, that at current compliance costs, that it would be $1.7 billion extra on Pennsylvania ratepayers every year going forward. So, I mean, yes, it would be wonderful if we could just have – we could magically have sunlight turn into electricity. But the problem is that there are a whole bunch of layers in between there. And especially if you don't like petrochemicals and hydrocarbons, you know, you're talking about a lot of mining, and that means an awful lot of big, giant earth-moving machines that run on diesel. So – but it, like, we're not going to think about that. We're going to just like magically pretend that it doesn't exist. That's a heck of a way to make policy.
Yeah, it's disappointing. And we've got so much opportunity here in Pennsylvania, and yet we keep stepping on our own toes, preventing ourselves from being able to utilize the vast natural gas reserves we have that provide clean, abundant power, the other resources we have in Pennsylvania that are a treasure to not only those of us in our state, but in our whole country.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we pursue these ridiculous endeavors that are only hurting people and making the environment worse off instead of better off.
And for those of us who are advocates for the productive sector, that we have to spend our time, energy, talent, swatting down bad ideas, trying to persuade people not to hurt us and, you know, not to hurt the Commonwealth worse.
While other states and other countries are having our lunch.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And that other places are moving in a positive direction. And as a result, that they are not only prospering to a greater degree, but that they're becoming more important in the national life of the United States.
Well, speaking of magic, I mean, I think everyone understands that steel is a very important item for us to have in our economy, and it's incredibly important for our national security as well. So I hope that that's recognized as this deal potentially moves forward, because it's like Steve said, all of those ships and planes and bombs and tanks and everything that won us World War II was produced by U.S. Steel and other U.S. manufacturers. So let's hope we can protect that ability to protect ourselves.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And all of our, you know, our industrial strength is our military strength and our national security. Ultimately, our freedom depends upon our means of defending it. So anyway, at the end of a long, difficult year, I want to thank our listeners for the time that you spend with us. We appreciate you being part of our conversation, that, you know, Pennsylvania is our home. Pennsylvania is our future. And so this is why we fight for the things that matter. And so we thank you for your good company. And I want to thank my friends on the panel for being part of our program every week. And so with that, Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your group and what you do?
Thank you, David. They can visit CommonwealthFoundation.org.
Awesome. Rebecca, where can people find more about you?
The Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association is at PMTA.org.
Excellent. As ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. And from Steve and Rebecca and me to all of you, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and we'll talk with you again in 2024. And now, Christmas Reflections from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. And now, as we celebrate Christmas and the coming New Year, it is an appropriate time to reflect back upon that very first Christmas. Often, Christmas becomes simply the holidays, with the true meaning buried beneath the hurried shopping and the pressures of the season. So before we close, I'd like to take a couple of minutes and read the account of the birth of Christ as written by the Apostle Luke. "And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was, that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, Let us now go, even unto Bethlehem, and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste, and found Mary, and Joseph, and the babe, lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, as it was told unto them. With this reminder of the true meaning of the Christmas season, our entire Lincoln Radio Journal family, Capital Watch panelists Dave Taylor, Rebecca Euler, and Stephen Bloom, along with Community Benefit Spotlight host Joe Geiger, Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi of the Allegheny Institute Report, and commentator Emily Green, join with our production assistant Joe Winters, administrative assistant Carol Henry, and our affiliate relations manager Tyler Henry in extending to everyone our best wishes for a blessed Christmas, along with our hopes for peace, prosperity, and many blessings in the new year. We leave you now with the sounds of the season by our friend Joe Trojak at Progressive Studios. For Lincoln Radio Journal, I'm Loman Henry. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.